Can I first acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet? Are there any parliamentary colleagues, please wave? No. I'm sorry to hear they've all left. But ladies and gentlemen, I note that from your program you've had a very early start, and I hope I haven't kept you unnecessarily as I'm almost the closing speaker. But thank you very much for suiting my convenience. I was away in Melbourne this morning and wasn't able to be here at that part of the day. Ian, in his introduction, made mention of the fact that I've had a long experience with bushfires in my constituency, and that is true. I was given a list of important lessons learned since the fires of 39, Black Friday, Victoria, 67, Tasmania, 83, Ash Wednesday, Victoria and South Australia, 94, New South Wales, 2003, Canberra, and this year, Victoria and Tasmania. I think the problem always about preparing lists is there is always one somewhere that you have overlooked. And I'm sure everybody is familiar with the bushfires in the Barara Valley in 1957. Which took out the Church of St Peter's in Hornsby. I think the fire station had to be moved later because of the damage. What you don't know is that then, very much as a youngster, I shouldn't really say it, but I was then 14. I was conscripted. I think that would be the only word, by a family friend, Bob Schofield, who later became the senior coordinator of the bushfire Rural Fire Service in Hornsby Shire. And he equipped me with a wet hessian bag, hoped I had some boots on, and took me out to help fight a fire. Well, all I can say is that I suspect it's all changed a little since then. In fact, I've seen much of it with the fires in Penitals Park adjacent to my own home, with the fire several years ago that ripped through from Maroota and finished almost above Brooklyn on the Hawkesbury River. And I saw the rather modern equipment that we now use. I marvel every time when we're able to fight the most devastating fires with rarely, but tragically still sometimes loss of life and still loss of property. And even more so, great inconvenience. In my own constituency at Mount Coringai, we recently had a major fire, and that closed essentially the north-south transport link. When the F3 is cut and you can't use the Pacific Highway, it is a very major factor in terms of traffic movements in and out of that significant corridor out of Sydney. So I suppose in that sense today has been a great opportunity for all of you, because you're people with expertise, of course you're very much aware of the impact, but more importantly what you're doing is talking about, I hope, workable solutions. And I have a particular responsibility these days in my department through Emergency Management Australia, because we coordinate Australia's response to disasters when they arise. And I might say I do get to hear many suggestions. That shouldn't surprise you. Some are rather extreme. There are people who think you can blow up fires with bombs. I mean, that's better than sedition, I can tell you. Deprive them of oxygen. I don't know how many people want a bomb let off in the Hawkesbury to deprive a fire of oxygen, but a novel solution, or a big block of concrete airlifted by helicopters and dropped on a fire in order to put it out. Well, I know we're in a drought, but I don't think water is yet so limited. I'm pleased that such ideas bring a smile to you, because I was worried about whether the jokes would work. But obviously, the major issue in relation to fires is the extinguishment of them, and the answer lies in using every bit of research, every bit of collaboration and experience that we can, and it's a team effort. And it's made up from all levels of government, key experts, agencies, as well as the community. Under the Constitution, the state and territory governments are responsible for protecting the life and property of their citizens during an emergency or a disaster. I might say, under UN conventions, we're responsible for providing for the right to life and safety of our communities. And the role of the Australian government is to ensure that combined capabilities and capacities of our emergency services can deal with emergencies, no matter what scale. And that's something that we contemplate today when we see the enormity of those that we face, but also something that from time to time people in other parts of the world have faced. We look at it when you see it in relation to Hurricane Katrina, for instance, what they faced in New Orleans. You look at the tsunamis, and fire has the potential to be just as devastating. And when a disaster does strike, we have the responsibility for coordinating assistance on a request by a jurisdiction that is not able to provide the necessary resources to manage the incident. And the government has been and will continue to be ready to assist in all of these situations. We know that it takes a cooperative effort between all levels of government to effectively protect the community, and we're committed to this arrangement across all forms of hazard. The arrangement is simple, it's well practiced, but most importantly, through its simplicity and flexibility, it works. And I might say we've seen that when we look at what happens in many other parts of the world. That our arrangements are simple, practiced, and flexible, and work. In this bushfire season, I approved a number of requests for assistance. This included the extensive fires in Victoria, where over 1 million hectares burned. And among other things, the Commonwealth was able to provide bulldozers, fuel support for water tankers and engineering plants, engineering support and reconnaissance teams, and specialist aerial mapping support. My department is also involved in managing a $6 million national bushfire awareness and preparedness campaign. And I'm sure all of you know all too well that a lot of what people can do themselves is quite important in protecting property when the risk comes. It may surprise you to know I commented today on how well my gutters drained the rain in Sydney because I'd cleaned them out for the potential fires. But it's something that we all need to think about in terms of hazard reduction. And you need to alert people to what they can do for themselves. And it adds to the efforts that states and territories undertake in promoting bushfire awareness, coinciding with the local bushfire season, and encouraging people to call a state information line to find out what to do. The campaign has several components, including television and radio advertisements, as well as radio interview series on ABC local radio. And the message is simple. Be aware and better prepared. And on that front, my department is also doing its part through working together to manage emergencies. That's an initiative that we put in place 2.5 years ago. It's a $49 million program that supports local government bodies, local organisations at the front line of emergency management. And local government, of course, in most cases, is best placed to determine and respond to local needs and priorities in preparing for and supporting the specialist responses necessary in times of emergency. Volunteers play a vital role in assisting communities to respond and to recover from emergencies when they occur. And herein lies the success of this initiative. It helps to develop self-reliance both at a community and local government levels. And I might say it was as a result of research that had been undertaken and given to government about how we might move forward in this area that I developed the policy initiatives that brought forward government support for this in terms of first election commitment and then budget outlays. Through other portfolios, the government is also funding programs which strengthen our national capability to manage and recover from fires. And this includes the National Aerial Firefighting Centre, which coordinates and manages the acquisition and deployment of firefighting aircraft across the nation. I'm sure others have spoken about this, looking at your guest list today, but operated by the Australian Fire Authorities Council, the centre plays an important role in helping to share aerial fighting, firefighting resources between agencies around Australia. And it also plays an important role in developing national protocols and systems for coordinating the aerial firefighting effort. And the government has also provided $15 million over 3 years towards the Bushfire Mitigation Program, which assists with the management of fire trails in the local community. And I know how important they are. You might be surprised. I almost inspect those near my home once a week. But they make a good running track as well. But this is in addition to the Bushfire CRC funding and the Natural Disaster Relief and Recovery Arrangements, which now average $66 million per year and paid for directly out to affected jurisdictions. All of these programs are designed in close cooperation with the state and territory emergency management agencies, and all are designed to ensure that we have effective prevention and preparedness. Obviously, the Australian climate is typically hot, dry and prone to drought. As we've seen in recent times, it is so often a sunburnt country, and the ravages of a big fire can leave it severely scorched and parched. And I'd like to say that despite the ongoing challenges of big fires, fire management, in my view, here in Australia, is in good hands. I think good progress has been made in recent years. Now, that doesn't mean to say there aren't lessons to be learned. There always remain lessons to be learned. There is always something more that you can do. But what we need to do is to continue our teamwork in preparing and protecting our communities. We also need to continue building our knowledge. And unfortunately, this is often acquired as experimental wisdom. Perhaps most importantly, though, we need to keep in mind that change is the only constant. We must remain flexible in our approach to protecting Australians and Australia from bushfire. And so to all of those who do participate, whether it's in research and whether it's through the various services, whether it's as volunteers or professionally, can I just say thank you for what you do, and can I assure you that my mind is always alert to further ideas that we might be able to pursue that can ensure that we are more effective in this area. And if any of you want to draw to my attention some of your work so that I can continue to fulfil my advocacy role, I'd look forward to hearing you, and I thank you very much for your courteous hearing. Thank you.